had a dream the other night. I woke up, or I thought I'd woken up, but that dream will not go away. I'm flying about 2 miles above the ocean with my crew of hurricane hunters. Sure enough, we're riding over the eye of the storm. We're shaken up, knocked back and forth in our seats, and our plane is tossing and rising and falling. Then we look down and we see not just this incredible strong hurricane, but also a terrifying change in the sea. A tsunami with a wave a mile high is sweeping towards the hurricane and joining its turbulence. And then suddenly close, we see a tropical storm swirling over the waves. It's headed to join the hurricane and the tsunami, and their power will overcome us. I freeze with fear and reach for my parachute with no promise of a safe place to land. And my shriek wakes me up. I'm awake, but it's no dream. Storms are raging everywhere on our planet. It was only 7 months ago when the storm of the coronavirus pandemic began gathering in the U.S. At first, it seemed to be moving slowly, but then it speeded up. Just one case washed up on our shores in early January, and now we have over 2 million cases. We have 116,000 deaths and counting with no end in sight. Our planet has now suffered 7.5 million cases and over 400,000 deaths. The tsunami is the wave of racism, and it has a different pattern. The fomenting of that violent rising began on our continent before we were even a nation 400 years ago with the slave trade. It took 90 years for the United States to outlaw slavery. It took 95 years to grant African American men the right to vote, and 144 years for African American women and all other women to get the right to vote. It took 180 years from the founding of our country for the stirring of the civil rights movement to surface. And that turbulent force, though sometimes hidden beneath the surface, has never ended. In the 165 years since slavery ended, decade after decade, African Americans have lived with inequity in housing, property, income, education, access to jobs and professions, health care, and with the fear for their lives. The murder of African Americans has been part of our culture. For decades, police have murdered about 1,000 people a year, most of them men of color and some women. And these murderers have almost never been brought to justice. The forces beneath the surface have always been stirring there, with occasional eruptions. In 1992, 5 days of riots exploded when the police were acquitted despite their savage beating of African-American Rodney King that was seen worldwide on videotape. The 17 policemen who stood by watching that brutal attack were never charged. Case after case of assault, death after death, has been reported ever since. Most often, the police who assault and murder African Americans are never charged, or they're acquitted if they come to trial. Outcries arouse us to the injustice, and then we turn aside to some other news. But suddenly, rising from the volcanic deep has come today's tsunami, our response to the murder of George Floyd. We watch it over and over again. After a peaceful arrest, the policeman presses his face down to the ground with his knee on his neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. Another policeman presses down on his back, and two other officers just stand by watching, waiting while he dies. The towering wave of today's tsunami has now spread through all the oceans of our planet and showered over continents and swept into cities and towns of our country and all over the world. This eruption of protest, of grief and anger, does not look like it's going away soon. People are rising up everywhere in rage and grief and compassion and hope. They know, we know, that Black lives must matter. It's not just life or death, it's all this systemic inequity in every sphere of life. It's not just police violence. That violence is the instrument that guarantees systemic oppression. As Charles Blow wrote in the New York Times, the police didn't give birth to American violence and inhumanity. America's violence and inhumanity gave birth to them. Well, that inhumanity lies as well in the heart of the awful vulnerability of Black Americans to the coronavirus pandemic. The mortality rate for Black Americans is 2.4 times as high as the rate for whites, and 2.2 times as high as the rate for Asians and Latinos. These mortality rates for Black Americans have remained constant from the onset of the pandemic. In some states, for example, Kansas, Black residents are 7 times more likely to have died from the virus than whites. Why the higher death rates of Black Americans? It has nothing to do with genetic differences, and it has everything to do with our racist culture and its systemic inequality. People's jobs, schools, and housing define their lives and their health risks and outcomes. Their lower access to medical care affects these risks. For lower income urban Americans, a distance of 6 feet can be a luxury. Asking people who live in very dense households or public housing to quarantine is incredibly challenging. And many Black Americans are essential workers in risky areas like healthcare and public transit. Then to these factors, add the lack of access to the COVID-19 testing, unless they're already hospitalized, these Americans can find it impossible to quarantine themselves, and they cannot prevent the spread of the virus. Black lives matter. Yet now we have that destructive storm issuing from the White House that's destroying the safety of all Americans in the sphere of the pandemic and destroying the civil rights of Black Americans and others who are joining the protests everywhere. Every medical and scientific warning about how to contain the risk of the coronavirus has been upended by the White House. More sickness, more deaths are the consequences. Every gathering of Americans to protest the systemic racism of our nation has been attacked by our head of government as he threatens the illegal use of military force to disperse protesters, while he disparages governors and mayors and police who support the right of the people to assemble. Is there good news as we ride these storms with powerful protests everywhere? Yes, some good news. Minneapolis is now banning the use of chokeholds. Charges against the police who took the life of George Floyd have now been upgraded. Dallas now requires officers to stop other cops who are engaged in violence against people. Police brutality in other cities has led to the suspension and firing of police. States and cities are considering how their police departments must be restructured or closed down so that the power of police unions can no longer protect their wrongdoers. And the street in front of the White House has now been renamed Black Lives Matter Plaza, with the beautiful yellow words painted on the pavement. People are beginning to hear and talk about our racist culture. Protests against racial inequality have now been sparked all over the world, including Mexico, Canada, Brazil, Holland, Germany, Ireland, Italy, Poland, Spain, Greece, Denmark, Australia, and New Zealand. But so often in the past, no substantive change has come of our protests and our demands for justice. And right now, our Congress is focused narrowly on police training, accountability, and punishment. Again, Charles Blow wrote, "These bills, if they pass, would basically punish the system's soldiers without altering the system itself." This country has established a system of supreme inequity, with racial inequity being a primary form, and used the police to protect the wealth that the system generated for some, and to control the outrages and outbursts of those opposed to it and oppressed by it. He wrote, "We need nothing short of a new Civil Rights Act, the Civil Rights Act of 2020. A Civil Rights Act. Does that sound political? Is it political to care about a black man who can't breathe beneath the knee of a murderous policeman? Is it political to care about a young black woman who's shot to death 8 times by the police while she's in bed in her home asleep? Is it political to care about a black man who's struggling to breathe with a coronavirus may kill him because he had little access to health care? Is that political? Or is it that ancient faith with us for thousands of years that we are called to care about those who are injured, those who are dying in the road from violence, those who are sick and at risk of death? Is it political to remember, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your strength and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself? Who is the neighbor of all those black men and women whose lives and safety have been assaulted at the hands of police? Who is the neighbor of all those women and men who've needlessly been exposed to the virus that's killed and will kill so many? Those thousands upon thousands who are gathering in the streets to ask for justice and equality and humanity are there to show mercy for endangered men and women everywhere. Those thousands are the neighbors of all those who are suffering, and they are our neighbors. What does the Lord require of you but to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God? Go and do likewise.